This is a special episode of the Really Awful Movies podcast. We took part in a panel discussion on weird horror movie weapons in front of a live audience at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Toronto for Horrorama. Horrorama is an awesome Toronto horror convention, the brainchild of Louis Ceres, who moderates the discussion, and Chris Alexander, editor of Shock Till You Drop. Don't forget to pick up a copy of Death by Umbrella, available at Amazon. On with the show. Welcome to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
Welcome to the panel of Death by Umbrella, the 100 weirdest horror movie weapons, which, you know, as horror fans, we all love to see the most unusual, bizarre, bloody kills possible. It's the stuff that we kind of talk about, the things that we kind of obsess over, and the stuff that we really admire the special effects of. And these two gentlemen right here, I will introduce as Christopher Lombardo and Jeff Kirshner. And they wrote a book. And they wrote a book covering the 100 weirdest ones. So first question I'll ask is the most obvious one, which is why did you come up with this idea?
Okay, well, before we begin, I just want to thank everyone for coming to our panel. It's early. It's Sunday. Some of you might be hungover, but I appreciate you coming. And Chris, you're the one that came up with the idea, so why don't you?
Yeah, and thanks for attending this little discussion instead of like participating in that awful Scotiabank marathon. Reference there.
We also have to thank the moderator too.
That
was what Trump forgot to do at the last meeting, and he got roasted for that.
Anyway. Well, growing up at 11, 12 years old, I was kind of a massacre movie completist. So me and my buddy would just rent anything with massacre in the title, and then invariably we came across Slumber Party Massacre, and it didn't really hold that much sway, but obviously the Gene Vincent kind of like rockabilly killer with his ridiculous guitar with the drill on the end of it, eviscerating co-eds, that really stuck with me, and I thought that's really nutty and ridiculous, and how can we somehow capitalize on that? And so I thought, this is a great death. I wonder if there's any more that we could possibly glean, and we all have a few in our heads of the ones we really like, and the associated weapons. I mean, hell, we could have done a book alone on Friday the 13th. So that was the genesis of that. And then I approached Jeff, who knows way more about horror than I do, even though, was integral growing up. But yeah, so I approached Jeff and I said, I got to tap into your vast knowledge of horror. So.
Well, thank you for saying that. It's funny because we have a podcast as well. We are the hosts and the founders of the Really Awful Movies podcast, where we talk about all sorts of genre films, whether it be good or bad, despite the name. And when Chris came to me with the idea for this book, I gotta say, right, at the beginning I was not exactly super excited about writing it. I'll be honest. The reason why is because growing up as a horror fan, when you're a horror fan and you are researching, I mean, this is pre-internet, right? So you read, you go, you buy books, and that's how you learn. And that's how you learn about things beyond, kind of from Henry, right? That's how you learn, beyond your domestics, your Carpenters, your Cravens, your Friday 13s, what have you. You go out, you find these books, and you hear about these obscure filmmakers, your Fulcis, your Argentos, Miques, what have you. And so I wanted to write a book like that. I wanted to write a book with substance. Not that the idea doesn't have substance, but at the beginning I thought to myself, okay, well, it's weapons. It's a great part of the genre. The kills are a great part of the genre, but what can we write about? I mean, okay, so it's a weird weapon. You take it, you kill somebody. What more can we do? But then, as Chris and I started brainstorming it and populating the list, I thought we realized that the weapon is really just sort of like a conduit to discuss the entire movie. And so it depends. I mean, we have 100 plus entries. So we have honorable mentions and we have dishonorable mentions as well. And some of the movies are crap. So all we can talk about is the weapon. Although you said that Slumber Party Massacre did not have much of an impression on you.
No, not at all. It just I was a metal head, and there's this guy again with this like Bebop Aluba killer kind of guy.
It's
with
an
this
amazing
big,
movie.
I know, but yeah, I don't know. I just thought, oh, this is kind of lame, man. Like, you know, he's
how old were you at the time?
Well, I was like 11, 12, and I just couldn't get into it somehow. Yeah. But it doesn't matter. That spawned it. And
have you revisited it since?
I have, and I have more of an appreciation for it now because I could see that a lot of it was tongue in cheek. Like, it's a Roger Corman production, and they make jokes about, you know, the parents being away when they go away for their little retreat, I think to a condo or something.
Parents always go away.
They always go away, yeah. But in
somehow,
this case,
I didn't know anyone whose parents
were the temporal or the chronology of it, like with the woman being, I don't want to say clearly to be unkind, but she's, let's say, approaching 30, and someone whose parents, you know, being away would not be, you know, really a factor into, you know, one's plans. But yeah, I thought they were sort of playing with that in a way. And
yeah, the girl group, they had some catchy tunes too.
They did.
How many people here like that movie? That's an awesome movie.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
But moving on. So, so anyway, so at first I was a little reticent, but then I realized, okay, you got to have a hook. Our hook is going to be the weapon. And through the weapon, we're going to write about basically 100 of our favorite, and in some cases, least favorite horror movies. But even the ones that are our least favorite horror movies, there's still an affection, I think. You've read the book, right, Lewis?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And there's still an affection for the genre. So if we don't particularly like the movie, we're still sort of putting it contextually within the genre, and we just want it to be like sort of like a love letter to the genre and everything that we love about horror, which oftentimes does come down to the gore and the kills.
Mm-hmm. So what was the process in kind of determining which movies you were going to cover? Like, did you use memory? Did you just kind of do some research? Did you just grab a whole bunch of movies and just start watching and
making
lists and stuff, or
all of it? I mean, memory for sure. The first thing we did was we got together over I would like to say coffee, but it's probably a few pitchers, maybe more than a few, and we just started brainstorming, and we came up with, I'd say, about 30 or so titles, 30, 40 titles, and then we started doing some Googling, and then, you know, we started populating the list, and now all of a sudden we're up to like 70, 80 titles, and then there was you. And coming to your store.
Oh, yeah.
And just chatting with you and, you know, saying, Lewis, can you, are there any scenes that stick out in your head? Any weapons that stick out in your head? And, and then as we were writing it, we realized that populating a book with 100 weird weapons is not a challenge. It's actually narrowing it down. Because there's actually a lot more weird weapons in this weird, wonderful, wild world of horror. Just the other day, I was watching, they had a Friday 13th marathon, and I was watching The New Blood. And I'm like, that movie is forgettable for some reason. Of all the, even though it is Jason versus Carrie, that one is forgettable. But I'm watching the movie and I'm like, fuck. There's like two or three weapons in there we could have put in the book.
Which ones?
Well, there was the pocket horn in the eye.
Oh yeah.
You guys remember that? And there was also the weed whacker. When he was going after Carrie Kaiser's character, the weed whacker. Yeah, so I mean, the reality is, it's not difficult to populate a book with 100 weird horror movie weapons. But
it took a while. Sorry.
True, but in our defense, we did get the sort of lawn maintenance subcategory covered with like Lawnmower Man and whatever else. So there are different. And I was thinking that too, is we recorded a Brood podcast, and of course, one of the little people, becomes, you know, sentient, emerges from the womb and attacks, I forget who it was there, I guess one of the litigants.
The grandfather.
The drunk grandfather, yeah. Mm-hmm. Pummels him to death, bludgeons him really with snow globes.
Yeah.
And we thought, damn, snow globes. But again, we had that covered at least in a similar kind of death, so you can't be a total completist. I mean, I spoke of my affinity for massacre movies. And I recently saw After School Massacre. It's about an aggrieved teacher who's the feeling the brunt of sex impropriety in a high school. He goes on a rampage, kills all the students, kind of thing. And in that movie, there's a bludgeoning with a radio and with a mailbox that he pulled out of the ground and bludgeons a victim. I thought, that's great too. But again, you know, I don't know if there's a sequel in us, but as movies keep getting made, I mean, we can't help it but miss a few. But we like to think, I mean, we got the big ones here and a lot of the little ones.
But that's the thing too. I mean, the genre is so fertile. And I mean, there's so much creativity and there's so many new ideas. Well, I mean, in a lot of ways, some people might say, well, it's all been done. I've seen it, you know, you've killed people in every fucking permutation possible. but there's always something new. There's always something different. And so I really do feel like, you know, down the road, once we make our money back from this book, we can make, you know, part two. Death by Umbrella, Death Harder, I don't know.
They're hard. There's constant new ones. Constant new ones, yeah. I remember seeing just recently, I don't know if everyone's seen Ash vs. the Evil Dead, but there's a great scene where there's, you know, a big battle with the Deadites, and it takes place in this diner, and the one Deadite is being bludgeoned, and then the woman takes his or her, I can't quite remember, head, and kind of runs it through a meat slicer.
Well, we have it in the book.
That is fucking
We have a meat slicer in the book, though.
Yeah, you do.
Poultrygeist.
That's right, yeah. What are some of your favorite ones?
You know, it's there's so many great ones. I mean, I'm not going to say this is my favorite, but this is one of them that how many people here have seen Bloodsucking Freaks? Okay. Amazing movie. Vile. I mean, you know, the complete antithesis of politically correct. But that one scene with the straw in the brain, that was one of my absolute favorites.
And that's pretty
awesome. I love that. I love the you know, the drinking of the brain through the straw. Yeah. So, like this weird Frappuccino thing coming out. That was awesome.
You mentioned Lawnmower Man. You mentioned the lawnmower in Dead Alive.
Of course.
That's
one of the greatest scenes ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when he gets to the end and kind of turns around and
yeah,
they're there. Gotta go through.
And then he's got like slips lying in all the viscera and everything. What else? Oh, I love Housey. The piano, the killer piano, and the bedding. Well, that's the thing. We actually have two killer beds in this book. We have Housey, and we got Deathbed, the bed that eats. So yeah. You know, it's amazing how many.
Just sleep on the couch.
Weird.
Yeah.
Until they make that movie.
Yeah.
That's next.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Couch surfing.
Oh, well, if I may, you know, chime in on a couple favorites, just going back for nostalgic reasons. I really, really dig Dr. Butcher MD, and Jeff is wearing an awesome Dr. Butcher shirt. And in that one, we gave kudos to the, you know, the atavistic retrograde, you know, cannibals on that island. And they use these bamboo traps that are sprung, and those are fantastic. Like, I love cannibal movies. Anytime a bamboo trap is sprung is awesome. Also, Hospital Massacre has a fantastic hat rack death in the first scene, where there's like stupid horror movies always have a prologue, usually with kids, and then they show how the killer became psycho or he had mommy issues or something. So in the first scene of that, there's, you know, young boy, he gets rebuffed on Valentine's Day, strings up, I believe, another boy on a hat rack, so that set off a Hospital Massacre, which is just glorious.
Some of the lunacy of these kills, honestly, is like, how in real life, like, how can you actually kill somebody
with a hat rack?
Shoving
it down their gullet. That would be the only way I could.
Yeah, but if you stick somebody in a hat rack, I mean, you might get a big headache. You're not going to kill them.
Another
one.
Happy
birthday to me.
Happy birthday to me. Yeah, you might, you know, prick them back to the throat. They might have to go see a doctor. They might have to wait for a while. They're not going to expire. But that lunacy of it all makes horror what it is. I mean, it's so awesome that, you know, as horror fans, we sort of suspend disbelief and we're like, yeah, you know what? You take a pointy little skewer, you know, and stick it down someone's throat, they'll die, no problem.
Yeah.
Or you take a party horn, stick it in someone's eye. Instead of them, you know, not having 20/20 vision, they'll expire. Okay.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's the equivalent of those westerns where someone's shot and immediately.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Every shot's a fatal shot.
Every shot's a fatal shot.
And in horror, every puncture is a fatal one. So, No. Exactly. Yeah. Oh fuck! I got a paper cut. Damn. You know. Another one I really like is Halloween 2. I love when it's another thing we're thinking too. Like, I mean, what constitutes a weapon, right? I mean, is a weapon something you can actually hold in your hand, or is it just an implement that killed the person? We had to sort of make that delineation.
Yeah, like some exclusion criterion.
Right.
Or about what, you know, because we do have lots of, I guess, machine becoming sentient killing implements. So.
Right, because, you know, I mean, originally I think you were saying that you just wanted something that someone could hold in their hand, i.e. a chainsaw or something, but I mean, that would sort of...
Well, then that would leave out killer breasts, which...
Killer Rec in the book too.
Yeah, Jeff is a producer of Killer Rec, which I highly recommend everyone goes out and see.
Not out yet, but it's coming out.
Okay, yeah. If you like Slime City, which we do, Slime City is terrific. It's by the same director, Greg Lamberson. Mm-hmm. But that's an aside. Sorry, I didn't mean to plug your movie there, but yeah,
I'm a social producer.
Really. Yeah, Killer Boobs, incredible.
We also have a Killer Condom.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, there's, you know, be fair to both sides.
Yeah, and I guess, true enough. Mm-hmm. And the book's subdivided into different categories for, you know, implements around the home, stuff you can find there, poking the eye with a sharp stick, machinery, all different kinds of categories to mm-hmm. give this thing a little bit of structure.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest weapons would be the vehicles, right?
Like. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously Christine is a weapon. You know,
yeah.
And we got a section devoted to Christine. Some of them are a bit weirder than others, but they're all somehow unconventional. I mean, maybe not unconventional in the sense of like what you're like that guitar drill combo you're speaking of, but just the way it's used in the scene. For example, Halloween 2, the scene where Michael Myers both drowns and scalds the nurse, the orderly. That's one of my favorite scenes. And, you know, using the hot tub as a weapon in that regard. Absolutely brutal, absolutely just mm-hmm. indelible, incredible. So yeah.
Yeah.
Just lots and lots of favorites.
Yeah, a lot of brutal stuff. Mm-hmm. And some things that don't make any sense too. Like sometimes when mechanisms are used to kill somebody, when physically it's impossible for them to have done it. Like what comes to mind first for me is the pop machine in Maximum Overdrive.
Another favorite.
I mean, it's not designed to shoot the fucking, you know, cans at, you know, 100 miles an hour. Like, it's impossible. It's, you know, not to suspend my disbelief in such a movie, but.
You gotta remember, I mean, Stephen King was like coked out of his gourd when he wrote that screenplay, right? But I mean, that movie itself could have been like, you know, we could have had a book just on that movie because, I mean, you have an arcade machine killing the guy that ended up killing, playing Gus on Breaking Bad. After that pop machine, which was completely ludicrous but completely entertaining, you got the steamroller coming in, to the incredible strains of AC/DC. It's just bizarre and wacky and weird. But yet again, I don't want people to think that we're just taking the piss out of this. We really do take the genre seriously, and that is something that's really amazing about horror, is that it's so fertile. You know, I mean. It's interesting because I'm going to maybe just throw a question out to you guys. Why do you guys watch horror movies? Why do you? I know why I love horror movies. Why do you love horror movies?
Anyone? Fun. It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun, right? And would you say that it's the killings that make it fun, or is it like the anticipation, etc.?
It's just the sheer ridiculousness of it.
Exactly. There's that, yeah.
Well, it's all considering. You get the campy type, or you get the ones that really want to scare you. Mm-hmm. So the ones who really want to scare you, you know, I piss my pants. That's why I watch them. It's visceral. Like I'm feeling that moment because I'm scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Makes me happy afterwards.
They're fun, and they're also they can be extremely cathartic. And sometimes when you have these really ridiculous death scenes, it sort of like it just, you know, if you are sort of like, you know, pissing your pants out of fright, and then they just use this completely ludicrous implement to kill somebody, it's almost like Sucker. It makes you feel a bit better because then you start to laugh and you have fun with it, and it's part of what makes the genre amazing. So
yeah, I mean, it's been said that, you know, a lot of people watch horror films to come to grips with the idea of death and exiting this mortal coil and everything. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, like the horror genre is the one genre that you have to justify to people for liking, which I find really weird. Like no one ever asks me, well, why do you like comedies?
I think people have to justify,
like, well, because they're funny. Yeah. You know, but with horror, it's there's a certain antisocialness to it, mm-hmm. that, you know, that begs explanation for some reason.
Well, I got two things to say. That number one, I think more people really need to be justifying watching Sandra Bullock romantic comedies than they are, because those are a lot more detrimental to society, in my opinion. There's that, but yes, we for some reason we do have to, you know, we're like freaks or what have you, or like, you know, how, I mean, why, actually, this is a bit of Chris, why do we call our podcast a Really Awful Movies Podcast?
Oh, yeah, it's something that's been a bone of contention with some potential interviewees that we've tried to pursue, and always someone will say, hey, my movie's not awful. And then we've got to explain that it originated by something my mom said, because obviously my affinity for the likes of, oh my God, like Slumber Party Massacre and Sorority House Massacre. And
waiting for Massacre Massacre.
Yes, yeah, I recently saw Babysitter Massacre and all that. So she said, like, I was watching some movie and she came in and said, like, why do you have to watch those really awful movies? And I thought, there you go. That stuck with me. And mm-hmm. yeah, so for better or for worse, that's the branding we've stuck with. And so far, it's worked okay once we explained it away. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And
that's our out. That's our out.
That is our out.
I totally know that because I'm also an English teacher, right? So I'm like, well, if in old English, awful actually means, you know, reverent, full of awe, etc. So if someone really takes umbrage, like one of the guests here, I'm not going to say who, yes, sir, what's the name of your podcast? After I interview them, oh, it's a really awful movies podcast. Fuck you, ambush me.
I'm like, no, we love you. We love your movie. We did a whole episode on it. If I say, but then, you know, some people will say, like, not that many people are that smart, you know, about the original etymology of the word awful, but exactly, it's full of awe, and there's a dual meaning. I'm kind of going on a tangent, I'm kind of digressing, but the other thing I want to say about justifying the genre, that's why things like this, Horrorama, that, you know, things and conventions of this ilk that you're putting on are so special, because it brings us like-minded people who otherwise might be considered, you know, outsiders, together, and we get into the same room, and we start sharing our loves of the genre. Oh, that t-shirt, fuck man, that movie's incredible, I love that scene, and so on and so forth. And all of a sudden, the so-called outsiders become the insiders, and that's what's amazing about Horrorama. So I want to thank you for, you know, for 3 years now, dude.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is that I think that, again, this is going away from the book and the weird weapons, but with horror, I mean, outsiders watch the movie, but I think horror fans are very, I mean, we're not outsiders. It's how the world perceives us, right? But I think that horror fans are so empathetic to the outsider in society. You know what I mean? Like, we are, just by virtue of the movies we watch, and I guess having grown up and defend our lives, I mean, we're just empathetic people. We're not these people, like, we'll walk by, let's say, somebody on the street that's, you know, begging for help or crying for help, like some base street executive or whatever. We're empathetic people because we developed this weird sort of empathy for the outsider. Like, it's, you watch, let's say, Friday the 13th, and you almost empathize with Jason at the same time as you want to see him get his comeuppance. It's very bizarre. It's a bizarre dichotomy. I don't know where I'm going with this. Do you guys kind of see where I'm going with it? Yeah. I do think, as horror fans, like, we are some of the most empathetic and emotionally stable and nicest people in the world, and that's another thing I'm proud to say. I'm a horror fan, you know. I mean, there's no justification for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's a reason why I adorn myself with horror tattoos. When I teach my classes, I don't cover my tattoos. I don't cover my, you know, Jason or Boris Karloff or what have you. I'm proud to be a horror fan, and I'm extremely proud to have written this book and. Yeah. And I'm proud of doing this panel, so yeah, a lot of pride. And I'm proud that you're my partner. And lots of love right now. Just love.
Oh, group hug.
All you need is love, right? And a good weird weapon, a good weird kill every now and again. Yeah.
I wanted to ask people in the audience, like, if they had favorite kind of weird weapons.
Well, one of the things I love is the Japanese horror, because they seem to go way out there when it comes to killer sushi. Most of the weapons used in virtually any of the Japanese horrors. I'm thinking the one that's coming up Tuesday night at the Toronto After Dark, as God wills, as the God wills.
Oh, the Miike film? Is that?
Yeah. Where it's like, you're going, okay, your little cat thing.
Yeah.
People blow up.
Yeah.
Wow,
And there's also that, sorry, Chris.
Oh no, I was just going to say, I really love Sion Sono, and he's got this fantastic movie called Hair Extensions, X2, is that the title in Japanese, X2, whatever it is, yeah. And hair extensions that become sentient and throttle people. And it's just, I love that, it's just fantastic. And this, one woman works in a salon, and she has to try and solve this mystery of what's happening. And yeah, it's just amazing, like that guy is so brilliant. And
we do have some Japanese movies in the book.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a house view. Even though it's not the most unconventional, I did put in, I wrote an entry on Audition just because I had to write about that. And the use of the piano art at the end is just absolutely incredible. And that's a movie that we're definitely not, you know, taking the piss out of. I mean, there's reference there. But what was that? There's a Korean film, Into the Mirror, where they use a pizza cutter.
Yeah. Yeah, that just happened to be in this woman's purse, like which spurs a lot of questions. Yeah,
it's multi-use pizza cutter.
This is true. Yeah.
How many people here are walking around with these? Like, what's pizza cutter?
Yeah, you get a free copy of Death by Umbrella.
Yeah,
you have one on your person. But yeah, speaking to like the organizational principles, I guess, behind this book, we tried to cover really all genres and all geographical locales in all years too, mm-hmm. because we have one, and I got to thank Lewis for this one. It's a Canadian film called Crawler, and I rented that, and it's about a bulldozer that's, you know, being contracted for work on a golf course to make some sort of development, and it becomes sentient and it unfurls its treads and throttles people. It's just amazing. Love it. So it was just like a killer bulldozer. It was like, damn, that's good, that's going to be with Christine. Yeah, so fantastic, just to bolster that chapter. Mm-hmm. So it was really exciting to, like,
And there's Killdozer too, of course.
Oh, Killdozer, yeah. And but
which
so we
Mr. finally manages to sneak up on people.
So yeah, it's good to get like the Javelin and Fatal Games, you know, but in addition to like some 80s stuff, which we love, like we love the 80s slasher boom, but also to have the things like Killer Rack with, you know, and whatever else, all the new stuff. It's just, everything.
And that's the thing. Well, I mean, you know, on the one hand, you write a book like this, it's great because it will never go out of date. You know, people still watch these movies, they're going to rediscover these movies, and they're going to, you know, read these scenes, or they're going to like really rediscover these scenes. However, with the genre just always being creative and fertile, and new stuff coming out, new crazy killer stuff that, I don't know, I think we will have to write a sequel somewhere down the road.
For sure, and there's definitely, again, no one-to-one relationship between whether, you know, a movie's unique, amazing kill makes it a good movie. I mean,
by no means.
Like, the graph would be a scatter plot all over the place. So some there are, and like every permutation possible, but yeah.
Well, that's the other thing too. I mean, there's a few movies by Herschel Gordon Lewis that we have in here. And
May he rest in peace. Yeah,
exactly.
Very
and
recently.
I had the honor of interviewing the guy, and when I was, when I found out that he passed away, I was actually teaching a class, and it was a break. And I went out and had a cigarette, you know, it's like, oh my God, Herschel Gordon. I went back to my class, I was in tears. I love the guy.
We were thinking about bringing him here.
Yeah?
And then we thought, well, maybe next year, because it was really cool. So.
Yeah. Now, sorry, what were you saying? I was following up with something you said.
I don't recall, but yeah, continue.
I love Herschel Gordon Lewis. There's something about...
Well, the godfather of gore, he really is the guy behind this whole book, really, when you think about it. Because his
book,
he really is integral. His movies, without... You know, those early films he did in the 60s.
Yeah.
The
Wooden Barrel kill is pretty crazy.
In 2000 Maniacs, that's in there.
You know, mm-hmm. Although it's not.
Also,
it's a modified weapon, I guess.
Yeah, but you know.
Roll out the barrel,
crazy. Yeah.
Also, the meat tenderizer and the Gore Girls.
There's something about meat tenderizers, you know? It's a bit like Meat Train. I love that tenderizer.
Well, what I love.
You know, I thought that was so great.
What I love about the Gore Girl Girls is before they tenderize the meat, they season it. So I mean, that's, you know, there was no real indication of any sort of cannibalism after that, but at least they, you know, they actually went to the trouble of seasoning the rump before they tenderized it. Brilliant. Beautiful.
Funny.
Gordon Ramsay approved for sure.
Another really good one I think is The Blender and You're Next. That was really
I really like Your Next.
That's a great movie.
I love those movies where, you know, it's set up in a specific way, and then one of the characters, or more than one sometimes, is not who you think they are, and things just shift. Like, like crazy. And Your Next did that. I thought she was terrific.
And that's sort of a great thing about the genre, too. I mean, a lot of people levy charges of, like, you know, misogyny on the genre, and I think that's very unfair. I mean, yes, there are some movies that are kind of purient and whatnot, but, like, a movie like Your Next, where it's the heroine is so self-sufficient, and many times in horror movies, the alpha males, they end up, like, they just totally flip the convention on the ear, and the alpha males become completely ineffectual, and it's the woman that rises up. You know, it's always the final girl that's resourceful, never the final guy. They're the ones that are always cowering in fear while the final girl is, like, kicking some ass.
Yeah, or full of false bravado to go out into the woods and, like, investigate, and then just they get knocked off.
Yeah, exactly.
Expendable.
Yeah. Does anyone else have a favorite kill?
I have a favorite one. Z is for Zygote, which is one of the short films in ABC's
Abyss. Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting because it was actually the fetus, like the fetus inside, that killed the mother, like flipping. And I just thought that was so insane and ingenious, and the way that it was shot.
Gruesome.
And everything too. Yeah. It was just such a. That's my favorite short I think right now, and it's just so powerful. And the idea that it was like the thing inside her grew, and now she was gone, and it took her four. Like, that to me was just mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Cronenberg obviously explores a lot of that with the body or something inside. But yeah, that segment was. Do you remember who directed that one? I don't recall.
Yeah, it was Chris Nash.
Yeah. That I think it was the best segment in the entire. That was amazing.
Really wonderfully shot and everything too, so that helped. But
very
very creative and with the gore and that whole scene was just awesomely done.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, like, weird sort of psychological underpinnings when you really think about it, so
yeah. If you think about it too long, it gets a little, like, creepy, especially the end, the dad comes home, it's a little gross thing, but still really cool.
I mean, did you have one?
The Curling Iron Sleepaway.
Oh, that's in the book.
I could not believe that. I didn't see Sleepaway Camp during my formative years. Mm-hmm. I only saw it for the first time maybe, like, I don't know, 8 years ago. And I was aghast at how terrible the deaths were. You know, the outhouse death, you know, was just horrendous to me.
Well,
and I thought this is geared, I mean, mm-hmm. I might be wrong, but it seemed to be geared towards, you know, older teens.
Mm-hmm.
And these deaths are insane. I mean, it's not specifically really, really graphic, but contextually it's like, oh my god, I can't believe they're doing this. And that was certainly one of them. It's like, oh.
Well, think about the Curling Iron too, is they don't show where it goes.
They don't, but you know.
We know.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrific.
Or is it just us? Projecting?
I think it's sort of like, you know, we've all accepted we know where it's going. We're pretty, and again, the implications, when you think about that a little, oh my god.
Oof, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Again, would that kill you?
I don't know.
We're not doctors.
Incredibly uncomfortable, but.
Yeah. Enable you to have a family for the rest of your life, but it would actually kill you. That's a great one. Yeah, that's definitely in the book,
really,
for sure.
Yeah.
Well, like a few weeks ago, I watched the collection for the first time, and at the start of the movie, there's like an entire nightclub that is ground up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's ludicrous, but it looks amazing.
What I like are these Rube Goldberg devices it's like, okay, if you had a master's degree in engineering and then 3 years to prepare it,
exactly.
It might work, but it was done 2 nights ago.
Yeah. I know, you can just picture the killer going,
well, what we were talking about the other day about because we were doing a podcast on Don't Go in the Woods Alone, that incredible classic for the ages, and you were talking about the swinging corpse and how
the timing of corpses swinging into view, and this is endemic to Friday the 13th, and how Voorhees is able to just get those flopping bodies to go right in front of the next victim. Damn, that's just so wonderfully telegraphed.
He's such an intimidating killer, but he's just staying there with the corpse going, okay, just wait a few more minutes.
Yeah.
Ah, here she comes. It's awesome.
Yeah, and the stuff that makes me laugh, that this is what's so great, is we all have our own lines. Like, I love Giovanni Lombardo Radice, no relation, Lombardo front, when he gets the lathe in the head in the City of the Living Dead. Like, that's cool.
Yeah.
But I don't particularly like when his penis is lopped off in the cannibal movies. You know, so I have my own line, you know, even with him. I like to laugh at stuff like Last House on the Left with the microwave, and they shove the guy's head in it, and they're And how the mic? Oh, the remake. Yeah. How the guy is using a microwave functionally with the door wide open, the guy's head in it. It's just, but I was just, oh, I love it so much. And it kind of ruined the movie, to be honest. But still, it wasn't, you know, wasn't.
It made the movie
should have microwaved the whole room.
Yeah. But yeah, I love just laughing and just this, you know, squirming at the same time. Mm-hmm. This is the best, you know, best reaction.
So let's say it's the best of both worlds in terms of catharsis, I think, you know, kind of screaming and laughing at the same time. It really is awesome.
Yeah.
I want to hear more, though. What are some of your other favorites?
Sheet music.
Sheet music.
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, see that? Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Like, you know,
that's cool. The first time I laughed at a kill.
But it's kind of funny because the movie itself is Killer Tomatoes, and we're accepting that, you know? So the sheet music is almost normal, you know?
Killer Tomatoes. Keep taking notes, man.
well, in our defense, no, not that I have to mount a defense for this necessarily, but yeah, we do have musically themed deaths, whether it be Eli Roth's Cabin Fever with a harmonica, well, I guess a swinging Yamaha guitar to the mouth of one of the campfire attendees, gets the harmonica shoved down his gullet, and then he starts wheezing. This is made like Bob Dylan, you know, before his demise. It's just, oh, I love that so much, you know. Not necessarily the greatest movie. I mean, your standard, you know, body horror with it, but that sort of made it right there.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
I mean, when we were talking about this book, everyone talked. We have illustrations in this book that there's an artist, Mark Thibodeau, who we met as Suspect, and he's incredible. And everyone knows this one, right? Deadly Friend, Wes Craven, the basketball. That was ludicrously insane. But I was going to do is the other one I wanted to say about for music is the
The trombone knife.
Trombone knife, the town that dreads sundown. That was pretty incredible.
Oh yeah, the town that dreaded sundown is so remarkable. A lot of people, I don't think, have had a chance to see it, but you get it.
See the remake.
Yeah, but I mean, like a Sackhead-esque kind of proto Jason in that movie, and it's a procedural, really, but it has so much going for it in its own right. And I was only introduced to it recently, and I felt like, geez, where have I been that I didn't see that?
Well, you weren't talking about horror at that point.
I guess you can only watch so many movies, but I'm really glad I saw that one.
The original's pretty fun too.
Yeah,
it's just be like a combination horror movie and then like goofy Keystone Cops.
Oh yeah.
Silliness, you know.
Yeah. Totally like dun, 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 dun. Like, I love Law and Order. It's so stupid, but anytime like inept cops investigate, it's like don't answer the phone is a similar like terrible police procedural where the cops are just going after trying to.
One of the ones that you wrote up for the book, which I think is great. I haven't seen and because you did the write up. Was it Murder by Phone?
Oh, murder. Oh yeah. Like, or also called Bells. And there's a someone answers a phone in the museum station just in Toronto here on the
pure,
number two line.
CanCon, yeah.
Or no, the other one. And yeah, it is pure CanCon. And like, why don't answer the phone? You know, no pun intended there. If it's ringing in a public like subway station, that's just so like it's full of germs anyway. Like, wouldn't touch any kind of public phone. It's so gross.
You wouldn't answer it?
No, and then it explodes and it kills this person. You know, so it's like crappy.
Well, chances are that won't happen.
No, fair enough, but still, I'm not touching public phones.
Well, these days.
Especially these days. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I don't want to, you know, but yeah, hilarious. Like, I just love connexploitation.
Yeah, we got a lot
this
of
so great.
There too.
And I had just more of a statement and a question too, but I really like when it's a super dead serious horror film and then like a death that you're just not expecting happens, like the sheet of glass that takes off the head and rolls over the glass in slow-mo, and you're like not expecting that kind of thing to happen because it's been such a serious movie the whole way through, and then you're like, wow.
Is that
but But then there was my statement more was I'm just wondering what you guys took on a movie where every death is completely ridiculous and what the hell, like Rubber. Is there just like a whole book dedicated that you guys have in mind? Because every death is like a fucking tire did it with its mirror mind.
It's the same thing. Well, we did write up Rubber in the book.
It's so charming and understated, and I really felt like empathy for the tire. Yeah. Like it was separated out from its natural home, which would be on a vehicle,
it's like
or at least in
something,
in,
you know.
Yeah,
the tire's name. Robert or something.
I don't know. It should have been like an, I don't know. Yeah, auto body shop or something, but I don't know.
Yeah,
that was amazing.
Yeah, Rubber's the epitome of who the fuck was this made for? But yeah, it is. It's
really,
really unique and really interesting. Yeah.
How do you pitch it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's what I wondered. Actually, I'm like, these guys got money. Jesus Christ. What am I doing wrong? You know?
But did a tire company produce it? Or
good yeah, exactly. Good
yeah.
Year. It wasn't a good year for most
good year. Sorry.
What are some of your other favorite? It doesn't have to be weird. Just like yeah. What, for example, let's throw out Nightmare on Elm Street. What's your favorite Freddy kill?
Puppeteer. Yeah, Puppeteer.
That yeah the
yeah,
that's
the movie was good too.
Yeah. We do have one in the book. We have the Carlos, the hearing aid, and then it becomes that parasitic thing as well. Yeah.
Yeah, the
Q-tip. Good. Yeah.
The bug.
Ridiculous. Well, no, the prime time bitch TV, obviously.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm talking about like suspending disbelief. In Halloween, when Michael Myers kills Bob and like pins him to the wall with a butcher knife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's something about Halloween that really beggars belief, but
I think it was the first one. I think it was Johnny Depp. Sucked into the waterbed and then just water.
Unbelievable. And what's also unbelievable is that room that they used, that spinning room, was also used for break into Electric Boogaloo. For a completely different purpose.
For the canon completeness.
Yeah, that was like dancing on the ceiling beforehand.
Oh,
yeah. You know what's funny about Halloween 2 is that so it sort of picks up where Halloween 1 leaves off. And Laurie Strode runs out, and then the neighbor comes out. It's like, oh, what's going on? What's all this commotion? Where the fuck were you in the first movie? All that shit was happening, man. It's like, now you're coming out? You know, maybe you could have been a bit more useful at the beginning.
Yeah.
Love it. I mean,
yeah.
No, I love it. If you think too much, you can't think too much.
Yeah.
I love it.
That was one of the first sequels that at least that I noticed that happens, you know,
immediately
after you know, like right from the get-go. And I thought that was a great idea. I'd never seen it before. I saw it when it came out, so.
And the other thing, too, I mean, I will say two things. Number one, I'm still afraid of hospitals because of that movie. And number two, that was probably the most sparsely populated hospital in the history of cinema. I mean, there was like more nurses and doctors than there were patients, right?
Yeah.
So it was kind of crazy.
Oh, well, I was just going to say the origin of the title, you know, which
Death by Umbrella.
Death by Umbrella
yeah.
springs from a kind of mediocre sequel to Silent Night, Deadly Night, with the killer Santa Claus, obviously. And the sequel is just full of stuffed chock-a-block full of footage from the first movie. Just crap. But it happened to have just, I think it's a mobster or something that gets pinned against the wall, and then the killer unfurls the umbrella, kills them. And then we didn't realize
how much upper body strength do you need to actually?
the tensile strength of the umbrella is absolutely unbelievable.
But there's like a death from umbrella in a film I saw, the Fantasia, Red Christmas.
That one I haven't seen, but
I think it's still on festival circuit. I saw it like a few months ago at Fantasia. But like there's like an umbrella through the head and opens and the head explodes.
Well, we have now. There's two umbrella deaths in the book. There's also that amazing Irish movie Stitches.
Yes.
Have you guys seen that one?
Yeah, a killer clown movie. It's amazing, amazing.
Which death was it?
Dude, it was another umbrella death. It was
what happens in that one?
Oh, it goes through the back of the skull, like the JFK assassination. And then like through the eye, and then it gets unfurled, and then the eyeball. the eyeball is on the end of the umbrella. It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, Connor McMahon. Fantastic, fun movie. Stitches. Killer clown movies are, really fun.
Yeah.
Given that, it's in vogue, or is that the group? Oh, whatever. Yeah, it's on vogue now because of all the killer clown or the scary clowns
that
are tormenting the poor kids.
Has anybody come across an actual clown? You have, really?
You have?
Well, my daughter
found
balloons in Hamilton.
Oh, yeah?
So it's like a social media thing where the clowns are like, where do you want us to go? And the kids are actually encouraging them to come to their school.
Oh, weird.
So the kids, she's 12. They go out on clown hunts with their friends, where the last clowns in the theater. And Aria actually found...
Write this down! This is Jennifer!
This is it, right?
She found, in a creepy alleyway on these stairs, balloons and gloves, so the clowns were there.
Bloody Mary
yeah.
just doesn't do it.
Oh my God!
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say. I mean, kids today are so much braver than I was.
Where have you gone, John Wayne Gacy? That the nation turns its lonely eyes to you. Creepy.
Any other interesting?
I don't know if it's in your book, but it doesn't. I always thought
All I remember, Sleepless.
That useless, like, terribly shot sequence where they just a million times stabbed through the throat. It just goes on to the point where you're like, who edited this?
As much as I adore Dario Argento, yeah,
that's one of many shark jumps.
That's sort of, Sleepless. No, that's the one with the Max von Sydow, right?
Yeah.
Kind of a forgettable one. I hate saying that about Argento, but
Argento.
What's that?
Oh, Argento.
Dracula 3D. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anybody here like Dracula 3D?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Sorry, John. I kind of liked it just because I was like, it's 3D and Dracula. Yeah. But then after a while, I was like,
there was a gentleman here in the front row with a Argento shirt and, you know, Tenebrae with a great, how would you describe that? It's a sculpture, right? Like an avant-garde art?
Yeah, absolutely.
A death art by sculpture? Avant-garde art, so yeah.
I think that's actually the very last entry in the book is Tenebrae.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Just in a great shirt.
I have that shirt too. It's a shirt. There's a lot of your shirts in the audience.
Any other ones?
I think that a pogo stick and a leprechaun.
Oh,
my God. And Death by Bong in
one of the
eminently forgettable Leprechaun Little People sequels. And just, it was so hilarious.
And there were two hits, one from the bong and one,
one hitting the floor. And a shout out to the mutilator too. You know, just the quintessential cliched 80s slasher, and it's got a fantastic death by outboard motor in addition to like the taglines here, but it doesn't mention the outboard motor, which is weird. That's the coup de grace in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. It's got by sword, by pick, by axe.
By axe, yeah.
Bye bye.
And no, bye bye, yeah. And then bye bye.
Actually, it's funny because you're both wearing shirts of movies that where people get or things get killed with outboard motors. Is the Dr. Butcher the zombie guy?
Ian McCullough, yeah.
And that was not coincidence.
That was not, yeah.
And I saw Chris here sort of doing like the wrap it up thing, right?
Here's the deal. Okay.
Yep.
We can keep going, but it's Jeff Lieberman's 69th birthday today.
Yeah.
So we were going to wish him a happy birthday.
Okay. Well, if I could just, this is the Here Comes the Cheap Crass Plug.
You can
right?
stay here if you want. I'm just letting you
know. Oh, okay.
How much more time do we have? What time is the?
We were gonna do it at about 5:01.
Another 5 minutes.
Okay. Because I was gonna sort of say, because he's like, the shirt says bye bye, and I was gonna say bye bye. These books are for sale. We will be selling them outside if you guys are interested. So.
Yeah. I'll just mention one other outboard motor death.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in I don't know if anyone's seen Turkish Captain America. But at the very beginning, Spider-Man's in it. And
Spider-Man's a mustache, and he's like a villain?
Yeah. And Santo's in it, too.
Santo's
in
it.
Of course,
it's
right?
The real title, like Three Mighty Men or something like that?
Yeah. And Spider-Man is a thug, and he has these henchmen that I guess do something he doesn't like. And they're on a beach, and he grabs an outboard motor and kills one of them with it. That's Spider-Man, so.
One of the greatest recommendations I ever got from from your store, and this was actually the dearly departed Queen Street location, was the Turkish Death Wish.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever seen that one?
Or Turkish Star Wars.
Well, there's Turkish everything.
Yeah. Superman. Turkish Exorcist as well, right?
Yeah.
It's an incredible seedbed of rip-off material. Unbelievable.
Turkish Superman you've got to see because, you know those shots at the beginning of every science fiction fantasy film where, the stars are going past you? They have hanging small lights in a darkened room to try and approximate that. And so you have the person walking through this grid on poorly lit stuff. It's incredible. Every movie should have that opening.
Yeah. And now we're totally way going on.
Yeah, we're kind of.
What about Planet Wars, Brazilian Star Wars?
Yeah.
That is just absolutely ludicrous. Yeah. But anyway, let's get some more deaths. What are some of your other favorite deaths?
liquid nitrogen and Jason X.
Yeah, and of course that's in the book. You see, again, like, I mean, I hate saying that, like, you know, one Friday 13th is more forgettable than another. I mean, that's, it is, it isn't one of the greatest, greater of the series, but that scene.
It's got a couple good kills.
Exactly.
The recreation
of the sleeping bag, exactly.
Sleeping bag death, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
favorite.
For
that's
sure,
right.
Yeah. And that scene made the entire movie, as far as I'm concerned. That was wonderful.
Because everyone's wanted to do that.
To stick someone's head in, like, in liquid nitrogen?
Yeah.
We
yeah.
talked about Michael Myers earlier. One of my favorite things is when he just forcefully jams his thumb through somebody's forehead. How can you do that? That's insane.
Again, yeah. Yeah, the improbability of these kills, it's just, it's boggles of mine.
Yeah.
And even at the end of Friday the 13th, what am I thinking? Which movie was that one? Yeah, didn't something... No, anyway.
What happened?
I can't remember.
Oh, Punch Through?
Yeah, was it when they,
yeah.
the fist through the throat or something? Was that Friday the 13th? The new one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's part eight.
Was that?
It's a boss.
Oh yeah, Julius.
Oh,
Julius gets
course, yeah.
decapitated on the building in what was that?
That was
in part eight.
Activate.
Yeah, yeah.
And they rip it off in Killer Clowns too, and they get Whoopi Dukes and bah! And
yeah, yeah, the bikers. Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually think Killer Clowns may have come first.
Did it? What was that?
I think so. Yeah.
The Prowler is good too. Prowler
yeah.
Magazine. That's intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate to keep.
Oh, the pitchfork
record, but that's
pitch. The knife.
The bayonet.
Oh, the bayonet.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's the thing with the Prowler.
Oh, they didn't hold the dance for years
because
of the, you know, the calamity of the first one, right?
But no, but the thing is, okay, so it's the Prowler. He's got these army fatigues and everything, and the bayonet is sort of like a tire appropriate weapon. But why the pitchfork? Was he a farmer before he went off the war?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's yeah.
Well, to be sort of to expand a bit about it is the acting in the death scene. So Reuben Blades in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, he has the best death scene in the closing credits.
Would this be the movie? Buffy?
Yeah, the movie.
Okay,
because
I'm not
just,
Paul Reubens.
Yeah, Paul Reubens. Mm-hmm. Thank you. He, Pee Wee Herman. Because you just imagine the director saying, bigger, bigger. Because he's got the stake in the heart, and it takes him like 4 minutes of credits to die. It was great.
I guess one of my lifelong, I mean, you know, having a book published is definitely a dream come true, but I do not feel fulfilled until I get killed in a trauma movie. Then I will feel like my life has been worth living.
Yeah, and Lloyd was kind enough to write the foreword.
That's true.
And it's so much fun.
Yeah. Lloyd's forewords are always hilarious.
Yeah, and incredibly vulgar.
Yeah. So, I guess we're going to be wrapping up. Is there anything that you'd like to finish off with?
No, I'm not gonna do that. No, I just want to say once again, thank you guys for, you know, coming to our panel. Totally appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Yeah.
And once again, thanks for inviting us to do a panel, Lewis.
It's
an honor. And
check out our podcast, Really Awful Movies. It's updated every week with different fun genre film. Predominantly horror, but it runs the gamut.
We
like,
also do
musicals, canon movies, everything.
Yeah, we did the Village People musical, Can't Stop the Music. We did Xanadu. We do the Apple. We like this sort of stuff, and yeah, lots and lots of canon.
And Bruno Mattei and Reb Brown.
Lots of
machine gunning movies. Yeah,
yeah.
Anytime,
yeah.
Anyone, like masses of, you know, soldiers are, you know, completely massacred in the Philippines, passed off as Vietnam, and we're there.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks everyone for
coming.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thank you.